Buried is produced and distributed by KETR.org and is supported in part by its fans and listeners who visit KETR.org and click donate. Sponsorship opportunities for Buried are available from KETR.org/buried.
I remember being at my dad's and he get a phone call that my sister was in jail. And I remember it because it was my birthday.
What's your birthday?
February 21st. And she ended up getting out the next day, and I know they impounded her car, which was, I believe it was like a gray-blue, because I remember when she got it with her income tax, and she was all happy, you know, that she had bought it, and she didn't owe anything on it, and, you know, I was happy for her.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how she got the car back. I don't know. I do know how she got out of jail. It was on a PR bond.
What's that, PR? Personal,
personal reconnaissance. And
you know, what was she in jail for? Just some
tickets. Okay. Just some tickets she didn't pay.
Well, I mean, it's not even that important that we have those, I guess, right?
Not really, not now. The only thing that I was really interested in on the vehicle information is gives you a lot of VIN numbers.
That's true.
The plate numbers, all of that information.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and I true. Actually asked for that.
Yeah, I saw that you asked for that, and they said it's an active investigation or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd hate to see an inactive investigation.
Hmm. But I got the note from, or the when they sent the attorney general a letter, I also got a copy of it, and it's in this mess somewhere, but this is the answer that I got back, which was basically no.
Yeah, this is the way that you're supposed to do it in Texas, mm-hmm. I think, is they... When they don't want to answer something, they say
exactly.
It. Yeah. And sometimes there's like good reason.
Yeah. But well, in this case, it has nothing to do with her going missing, except for that's the last time we seen her was in that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked for the records from when she was arrested from 1991.
Well, I wonder if we should ask for this separately, you know? Like
that's probably what we have to do, is be that specific.
Yeah, because then they can't deny it.
And I'll give you the document on that 1991, too.
Okay. Yeah, it's really interesting that she was arrested so soon.
Yeah, and then she just, poof.
From KETR Public Radio in Northeast Texas, this is Buried, a podcast and investigative series about the 1991 disappearance of Carrie Mae Parker and about a well and a shed.
So when I had my, I want to back up a little bit before I go into the property. When I had my interview with the police, they told me that someone told them, I don't know who it was that they talked to, but it was from the old school that knew Carrie.
I met Carrie's sister, Patricia, at her house in Central Texas. She was simultaneously explaining her encounter with Sergeant Jeff Haynes at the Hunt County Sheriff's Office and digging through files on her kitchen table. So the topic of conversation shifted abruptly upon each new discovery from the pile. But I left feeling like I had a good idea of what happened that day in June 2013, some of which we heard about in Episode 2. The most significant of which was that Haynes at one point asked Patricia if she had anything to do with Carrie's disappearance, and how upset that made her. Another thing that we haven't talked about yet is that Patricia also sought records about Carrie during that visit, and never received them. More on that in a second. Patricia doesn't live in Hunt County anymore, so when she comes in for a visit, she'll often try to accomplish a few things. On this particular day, Patricia says she was going to visit the funeral home that handled her mom's burial. Her father was still living in 2013, but his health was getting worse. He eventually died in 2015, and during all this time, no one ever interviewed him about his daughter's disappearance, or about the theory you're about to hear right now, to be followed by a story that you will not forget soon. Here's the first one, from Patricia.
So when I'm over here at the interview, they said that they had been told that my dad had killed her, and that he had buried her. Get this is how smart they are. He had buried her on the cemetery property that he had bought for my mom, him, and the three kids. Okay? I'm like, well, I'm sure I had a dumbfounded look on my face when they made this little story to me.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what my response was, to be quite honest with you.
For one thing, didn't he buy those cemetery plots after she... Okay.
But they didn't know that.
Yeah.
So there's two sets of documents we're talking about here. They're not related, but they're part of the same encounter with the detective. The whole point of Patricia's trip to the sheriff's office that day was to get information about Carrie's arrest and her car, the Buick she bought before disappearing. According to Patricia, Haynes refused to give her the information that day. But according to Hunt County records, Patricia made the request that day, so it wasn't officially denied right away. At least I can't see anything to support that. But Patricia at least reacted as if it was and decided to stop cooperating with the detective right then and there, partly due to the perception that the request was denied, but also because of the suggestion by Haynes that she had something to do with Carrie's disappearance. And then this stuff about her dad maybe killing and burying Carrie, so it wasn't an entirely friendly encounter in the first place.
I said, look, my dad had, I have a power of attorney over my dad's stuff. I said, I'm going to go down there. Matter of fact, I'd done planned on it before I'd even went to Hunt County to talk to him about getting Carrie's documents. And I was going to go down there and get the documents on Dad's plots. He begged me not to. Just go on ahead and let us do it. Oh, screw you. I'm thinking to myself, uh-uh. They done told me I couldn't have these papers on my sister. And you think I'm going to sit around and wait where I can't have my papers on my dad now? No, I don't think so.
Wait, but what?
He didn't say why. But he wanted me to let them go and check it out.
Well, maybe it's because they didn't want evidence to be tampered with or something like that, right? If they're, think about it. If they were really convinced that he did, you know what I mean? I can see why. Or am I? You think I'm?
No. I mean, maybe that is the reason. I don't know. But after they denied me the papers on Carrie, and asked me the questions, oh, you must be feeling guilty after all these years is why you're in here doing this and that and the other round. Really? After that?
Still, you can hear how confused I was to learn that Patricia left Haynes' office and did the exact opposite of what he asked. Even though she thought the investigation was going in the wrong direction, which it clearly was if Patricia was the first person any detective bothered to interview about her sister's disappearance. But the blow-up between her and Haynes that day led to strains with the family that still haven't been resolved. But it wasn't until August 21st that the state of Texas formally decided that Hunt County wasn't required to give Patricia her sister's vehicle information. I know this because Patricia gave me the letter from the Attorney General's office responding to the county's request for an opinion on if Carrie's license plate was releasable or not. This is all boring, standard procedure for information requests. How it works is that, speaking very generally, the agency receiving the request has two options when you ask for something. Send it within 2 weeks or get in touch with the AG and ask if they can withhold it. Journalists deal with this every day. I've gone through this routine at least a dozen times since starting this podcast. I'm mentioning it here because you can glean from the AG's response what Hunt County wanted to withhold from Patricia, Carrie's license plate number. However, the AG's response about the license plate number isn't consistent with a page out of the detective's notes from Patricia's interview. That note reads that Patricia asked him about the car Carrie owned at the time she went missing. Haynes explained, according to the summary, that because he didn't have the VIN or license plate number, he hadn't been able to recover any information about the car. So it appears from Haynes' own words, but not the Attorney General's letter, or presumably what Hunt County sent to the AG, that Hunt County didn't actually have the plate number for Carrie. In fact, I'm not sure they even knew what car Carrie was driving. And this was in 2013, 3 years after Carrie's family filed a missing person report with Hunt County. And they still didn't even know basic information like her license plate number. That information, by the way, is part of her arrest report from 1991. Patricia, who was not a police officer, was aware of this, but apparently nobody at the sheriff's office had thought to check that report from 2010 until Patricia went up there 3 years later. This matters because Carrie was driving the Buick when she got arrested on February 21, 1991. The deal with the car is a whole other episode worth of stuff, but for now, the part that matters is that Hunt County appears to not have Carrie's VIN or license plate number. even though all they had to do was look up her arrest report, which includes the license plate number and the VIN.
But anyway, after that, I had already made up my mind. I didn't care what they were going to do. I'm going to go get my documents.
So what did you find?
So I went and discovered,
first of all, where were they?
At the Terrell funeral home. At Terrell, it's a common name. Why can't I know it? Libran Funeral Home, I guess, or
I'm just curious what kind of
maybe it's probably in here.
Yeah.
Shit. So anyway, I went and looked at Dad's stuff. First of all, my mother didn't pass away until 1995. My mother had MS. She was always sick when we was kids, so I grew up taking care of my mother instead of being a child.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't buy Mom's plots until right before Mama died. Actually, it was the day my Mama died.
Okay.
That he went and bought the plot for my mom, and he bought one for himself.
What year was it?
1995.
Right, okay.
And as soon as I got the documents, I was nice and sent him a copy so that way they knew.
Yeah.
So then I went and found, also went and looked, and he purchased the kids three spots in 1997. So basically, I disputed their story, what they were told.
Also in Haynes' notes is confirmation of Patricia's memory that he confronted her with the theory that their father and Carrie had a falling out and that he killed her and buried her in a funeral plot on private land. Haynes' report notes that Patricia responds, "That's a new one on her." Before it's over, Haynes actually asked Patricia if she had something to do with Carrie's disappearance, which maybe is just detective due diligence, but it didn't go over well with Patricia. 4 years later, she cited it as justification for going to get Howard's records, even though the detective in the case supposedly begged her not to do it. Haynes also asked Patricia if she thinks Howard killed Carrie. Patricia responds that she doesn't know, but she always thought it was odd that their father never seemed to pursue the matter like she was trying to do now. Also, keep in mind that Howard was still alive in 2013. He died 2 years later, and Hunt County never interviewed him.
So some of this stuff I'm probably going to have to just send you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Or I can let you take it with you. But I don't know how you're going to, like, decipher through it like I am. But this is the document you're welcome to have. That's proving that my dad didn't do what the cops were told.
Yeah.
He couldn't have.
Because, I mean, anyway, they can just look, right?
Do what?
They can just look.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here picturing myself. Let me see. This cemetery, first of all, is right off of Highway 34, which will be able to be seen easily from the road. My dad don't own any kind of machinery, so what, he's over here with a shovel? Really?
Making a movie.
You know what I'm saying? No, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I think I was more overwhelmed by the story ignorance than I was them even accusing my dad of having anything to do with it. And you know, the possibility, I didn't just have tunnel vision on this shit. You know, I thought real hard about how my dad acted when she was missing. You know, I thought real hard if there was something other that triggered my mind. I mean, something would have stood out to me because, you know, I knew my dad and how he was.
And you were living with him.
Yes.
So,
well, not only that, but, you know, he's my dad.
Yeah.
You know, even though we didn't have personal conversations
Everyone
and things, you still know your dad. It's kind of like I know my son.
Yeah. Your dad acted like
I didn't see any change. I mean, I seen I don't even think that I seen really a lot of worry.
Because that's kind of interesting.
But not that it's really hard to say, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's kind of I don't see him like me getting upset and crying, you know, if it was my kids. But my parents weren't typical parents either. You know what I mean? My parents, I mean, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and my dad was pretty much the primary caretaker of us kids because my mom was always sick. So, and my dad wasn't, they didn't have much money. You know, I couldn't even have a quarter to go see a puppet show. So, you know, he was an excellent provider. But there was no nurturing. There was no, it was more like, go stack this lumber. Go mow the yard. Go do, the, you know, more of that type of stuff from my dad.
While Patricia believes Howard was incapable of burying Carrie in a cemetery, and I'm with her on that one, there was this other story everyone in the family knew, and it sounded weirdly similar to the information Haynes supposedly received from his source. Actually, I mentioned part of this in the first episode, how Howard told Carrie's siblings and her children about receiving threats by phone. What I didn't mention is that Howard claimed one of those threats was in person. Patricia heard about what might have happened years later, and it was secondhand. But let's hear her version of it anyway, since this was the first time I'd ever heard it. You can actually hear the look on my face in Patricia's voice as she starts digging up these stories for the first time and repeating them into a microphone.
Dad had said a story that there was some guys, after Carrie come up missing, there was some guys, and he named his name, that came up to the house and threatened him. And I know after Carrie went missing is when my dad started carrying a gun. He went and got his carrying license and all that stuff. I mean, he never went anywhere without his gun.
And do you think that was related to her gun?
Well, that's the only reason I can come up with. Matter of fact, I had the gun here that he carried. But my dad said that a few guys came and threatened him, and he went out chasing them. And where my dad lived at is kind of like out in the country, and lots of trees around Tewakene and stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he chased them in the bushes, and my dad claims that he killed one of them and put them in a well or something other on his friend's property across the street from where he lived.
Whoa, sorry, back up. When did these people arrive at your dad's house?
After Carrie went missing, and Dad said it was a couple of weeks after she went missing.
Patricia told this same story to Haynes during her visit, according to a paragraph in his summary of the interview. And yet, no one ever went to meet Howard and ask him if he killed any people and buried them literally across the street from his house in Waco Bay. Instead, they argued with Patricia about forensic hypnosis until Howard was dead. So, a lot just happened. Before I move on, let's do a really short recap. Patricia sought information from Haynes about Carrie's car. During that same meeting, Haynes confronted Patricia with the theory that Carrie's dad, Howard, killed Carrie and buried her in a cemetery plot. Howard had supposedly bought the cemetery plots for the grandchildren, just in case. But Patricia says she discovered that Howard didn't buy the plots for the grandkids until 1997, a full 5 years after these supposed threats occurred. So we don't think Howard buried anyone in a cemetery back then. But there is this one time he might have buried some people somewhere else, across the street. Here's Brian, Carrie's first child. He was with Patricia that day at the sheriff's office, but they didn't interview him. By then, they hadn't interviewed anyone in the family except for Patricia, and only because she was up there anyway. And it didn't go well.
The only thing that I can rationalize with the police not getting involved is that they have too many stories or too many different leads or too many, you know, they don't know which direction to go, and they're always going to look at the family first.
Yeah.
And I think my aunt got a little hurt whenever they talked to her and investigated. You know, it had her interrogation pretty much.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, right. She
I
know
she would appreciate that.
Right.
She was young too, right? She wasn't like.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I know that they say... You know.
Brian Parker is Carrie's son. He also hasn't been interviewed about any of this stuff I mentioned so far, much less his mother's disappearance or what he heard growing up. He was a child, but kids have eyes and ears, and it continually shocks me how much Brian and Brandy can recall from their childhoods. And it's information I've been able to verify independently. So when Brian says his grandfather told him about killing two people and burying them in a well, you can believe that's what Howard said. Here's what Brian told me.
Can you tell me what you know about this story that your grandfather might have told your aunt that some people came to his house shortly after?
Yes.
You know this?
I think I don't know if my grandfather told my aunt, but I know I told my aunt. So
okay. Maybe it's from you.
Right.
In fact, I think almost everything she says that your grandfather says is really from you.
Yes.
Like mostly, you know?
I was really trying to get some answers because I was struggling with a lot of stuff.
Yes.
He said that one day when we were at school, he had a knock on the door, and it was two young men, and he said that he knew why they were there, and he had seen one of them before with my mom, and this was after the threatening phone calls, and he said that he grabbed a knife, and he ran out the back door, and he said he took off running down Bob Arnett's Road. And he made sure to tell them, you know, don't follow me, and took off running. And he said that they followed him down there into the woods, and that he fought them and stabbed them and killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so he said that from then on, he went up to our neighbor's house, which was Carl Garris. And him and my grandfather were really good friends. They were really close. And he said at that point in time, Carl was digging a hole. They also called him Shorty. He was digging a hole because he was trying to have a well on his property, and that Shorty helped him dispose of the bodies, and they threw them down there and covered it up and then put a shed on top of it. So
Howard eventually developed dementia in the last year or two of his life, but everyone in the family says that his supposed confession was not during this time.
I was 23 or 24.
Yeah.
So this was about 8 years ago.
So had his mental health started declining at all? This is the other...
Not at this point. I could still see, you know, like his health was getting worse, but not his mental state. I think it was after he had gone into the nursing home, maybe a year or two after that, and that I started to see a decline. And
but did he start saying different things about this then? Even in his decline?
What do you mean?
Like, I guess I'm trying to, no offense to your grandfather, obviously, but I just mean, like, I wonder if he was in a clear mental state when he was recalling all these things.
But I know that he was on a lot of medication, mm-hmm. and I know one of them was, a couple of them were benzodiazepams and painkillers. So, like, you know.
At the time he told you this, or...?
Well, yeah, because I used to help him in and out of bed and give him shots and make sure he took his medicine and things like that. So
this is just specific memory.
Yes, I know. And you know, here's the thing, too, is, you know, my grandfather only talked to me about it once. I mean, this wasn't like we sat down and as like, and he was very guarded. And like, I want to believe that my grandfather was being honest and trying to get something off of his chest.
Yeah.
He said, because I grew up, you know, him screaming in the middle of the night, and I'm running in there, and I'm like, Papa, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I was having a nightmare.
Oh, wow.
And whenever he had told me those stories, he said whenever he was having those nightmares, it was about that.
Wow.
So, I mean, I want to believe him, but it's, you know.
That's crazy, though.
Yeah.
So, but it's not just some random, crazy, shouting, lunatic thing to say, right? It's
like whenever,
very specific and very, like, disturbing.
Whenever he, you know, whenever I'm running and waking him up, he's screaming, no, stop, and things like that. And so, I'm trying to wake him up, and, you know, he's flying up out of the bed, like, he's about to take me down.
I have a hard time recalling what he said the timeline was, because it was a long time ago.
Brandy is Carrie's first daughter. Here's what she remembers.
There were two guys that came out to the house while I was living with my dad, and Brian was at school. I don't know where Mandy was, but he made it sound like it was just him and my grandma at home, and my grandma was bedridden. But he said those two guys had knives, and he went outside, and he always carried. He had a CHL license, and he always had a gun on him. And he said he led them, off of the property, and, they followed him into the woods. There's the state park around Lake Tawakoni was right behind, where we lived. He wouldn't tell us exactly what happened out in the woods, but he alluded to, he was the only one that came out. And he said that he wouldn't tell us what happened or what happened to their car. And that's all he told us about that. but he did buy 3 burial plots for us. I have a hard time with believing whether or not that happened. Like, I truly don't know, because why would he buy those burial plots? Because he did. Why would he buy them for the 3 of us, but not his other kids? Like, that wouldn't make sense. He didn't have burial plots for Patty and Mary and Glenn.
How do we know, though, that they're labeled individually for a person? Do we know that?
The burial plots? Mm-hmm. They're not. One of them is has my mom's headstone on it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, that one I can understand, but, like, I just mean that, is it necessarily for the 3 grandchildren, or is that?
That's what he told us. Okay. Yeah. He actually told us that's why he bought them.
But I also saw that he didn't even buy them until, like, 97, maybe, or something like that?
That's a good point.
I could be wrong about that. I think that's what it said, or at least the piece of paper I had.
It probably would have been closer to 94.
Okay.
I think may have been around the time my grandma died.
Brandy spoke of the well as an afterthought, as if it was a separate story from the incident in the woods. This is because Howard didn't tell her this part, but she knew about the well.
Our neighbor growing up, I am having a hard time recalling his real name now. Shorty.
Shorty, yeah.
Yeah.
Not his real name, but yeah.
That was crazy, old man. They were Pawpaw's age. I mean, they were good old boys. They were not people who call the police when they have a problem. They are people who take care of problems themselves. Or at least that's how it seemed to be portrayed. But I don't remember who said that those bodies that Papa claimed were in the woods. Well, he didn't even claim there were bodies in the woods. He just said that he is the only one that came out. Somebody said that those bodies were in a well that was on Shorty's property, and Shorty filled in the shed and filled in the well and covered the shed. I mean, just what you've been told is what I've been told. I just can't remember who told us that.
That's what I heard too.
But I think it was Glenn, because there was a, well, I don't remember actually seeing a well, but it was confirmed by several people that he used to have a well there.
Under the shed?
Yeah.
And there's definitely a shed?
There's definitely a shed. It was behind his garden. He had a really big garden, and they would can vegetables, and he'd keep all his canned vegetables in the shed.
Can I actually show you a picture of that property, and you can just point out where the shed was, maybe?
Yep.
To the best of your knowledge?
I know exactly where it was.
I obsessively tried to figure out where that damn shed was.
Waco Bay Loop. I should know that.
Yeah, I'm sure you know it.
No, I should. I P.O. Box 92B, and then they changed it when we didn't do P.O. Boxes.
That's the problem, is that the addressee...
If you can Google Maps it, I can show you where. Yeah. I mean...
I was talking to Brandy that day in her living room, and her husband Chris pulled out a computer to show us satellite photos of the Waco Bay area of Lake Tawakoni. Brandy gave us a virtual tour marking where the well and or shed was in relation to Howard's house. It's right across the street. The property belonged to a man named Carl Garris, but everyone called him Shorty. He died in 2003. Carrie's brother Glenn still lives in the Waco Bay area, and he's friends with Shorty's son, Mike.
We had a neighbor across the street, his name was Shorty Garris, and he's ex-World War II. And him and Dad pretty close, and Dad claims it took 3 of them come in on him. I think it actually started at the mailbox, and Daddy ended up going to the house. I guess Shorty was out in the yard or whatever, and seeing what was going on, my daddy gone to the house, I guess, to get the gun. Because my dad's always owned the gun. And he didn't go through big details of it, but...
After talking to all 4 of them, Patricia, Brian, Brandy, and Glenn, about what they knew, it was obvious they'd heard slightly different versions of the overall same story. A knife according to Brian, a gun according to Glenn, 2 bodies according to Brian, 3 people according to Glenn. But hold on to that thought for a minute on the 2 people versus 3 people part. There might be a way both of their memories are correct. Anyway, aside from those 4 family members, I set out to meet 2 others to hear about the whole incident. You're going to hear from both of them in the next episode. The first one is Mike, the guy who lives on the property now. He's the son of Carl, a.k.a. Shorty, the one who was digging the well.
Apparently, the perpetrators ended up getting in a crossfire between my dad and Shorty. I think Dad said he killed one and Shorty got the other. Now,
crazy.
How much truth there is to it, I don't know.
On a muggy day in June, Glenn and I drove over to the intersection on Waco Bay Loop where Carrie Mae Parker was living not long before she vanished. We stood in the middle of the road, right in front of their overgrown property. No one lives there now, even the trailer is gone. It's just trees and a very tall grass. Aside from a burn barrel, there's not many signs of human life. But we weren't looking at Howard's property that day. We were facing the other way, across the street, peering through cracks between metal sheeting tied onto a fence, along with the dense trees along that property line. It's hard from the outside to get a good look at anything on the secluded property that was once home to Howard's old pal Shorty. If you stand at the front of the gate and tilt your head just right, you can make out a shed in the back corner behind a garden. But you have to actually step foot on the property itself to see the circle of concrete that no one can explain, hidden under a rug and other debris that litters the yard behind Mike's mobile home. On that June day, we were waiting outside to meet Mike, so he could let us in to see all those things up close. But he didn't show up. So we went back to Glenn's place. It was there that Glenn told me about a different man. Someone who could have answers about what might have happened that day in 1991 while Carrie's kids were at school.
That's what my dad said. But one of the guys he claimed came into the house is still alive.
Next time. Buried is produced by Emma Anderson and me. Its executive producer is Jared Knight. Brad Davis composed the original theme music. Podcast cover art is by Crystal Sid. And our photographer is Brittany Greider. Stay up to date by following us on Twitter. Go to twitter.com/buriedradio. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, and our email address is buried@ketr.org. You can also visit us online at ketr.org/buried. Special thanks to Kathy L. Alexander, Claudia Alvarado, Susan Jin, Laura Kinnemer, Rhonda McKeehan, and Jeffrey L. Moore. Thanks also to Katrina Pemberton, Ross Pelletti, Daniel W. Ray, Christy Roundtree, and Brandon S. Shelby. And thanks again to the public information officers at the Van Zandt and Rockwall Sheriff's Offices. Buried is a production of 88.9 KETR, public radio for Northeast Texas. To support Buried, go to ketr.org and click the red donate button. And thanks.